You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Hello, and thank you for joining us for Catholic News. My name is Chris Mihalik. The source of our program is DenverCatholic.org. Eucharist and Education, Communicating Excellence, by Father Jose Noriega, pastor of St. Mary's Parish, Littleton, and Father James DeSandra, principal at St. Mary Catholic Virtue School. What is education? Who has not been surprised to hear a child saying, "Now I understand," or "I want to do this on my own"? Until that very moment, everything was struggle and darkness. Afterwards, the path was made clear and everything was illuminated. Today, we have great difficulty in understanding what it means to educate. On the one hand, we want the child to see the same truths we see and to want the same goods that we want, while on the other, we expect him to discover by himself what is true for him and desire what he himself has determined to be good. In doing so, we move between indoctrination on one side and teaching only procedures on the other. To educate means, according to its etymology, to make come out, to bring to light, to give birth. What comes out or is brought out from within is the light of the truth and a desire for good. Whoever educates gives birth to a very great novelty. The child not only understands what things are, but also why and what for. The origin and destiny of things are revealed to him, and thus he understands the project of the Creator. How do we get there? Plato explained, "After a long conversation on a certain question and in the friendship, suddenly, as the fire is lit from a spark, light arises in his soul, and from then on the person lives from that light." The spark that ignites the fire is the one that uncovers to the child what makes life great and beautiful and why. Thus he understands what happiness is and decides to walk in its pursuit and actualization. To educate is not simply to prepare someone for a job in the future, but to light the fire that illuminates what makes life great and beautiful. The child needs many sparks to get an overall vision of the greatness of his life and how to make it possible. As the diverse sparks ignite in the various stages of his life, he will acquire the virtues that will allow him to be a man capable of enlightening the truth by himself and to want the good by himself. What educates? Education is the indirect effect that remains in the minds and hearts of young people when we do things, when we do good things together, be it seeking the truth, competing in sports, playing, eating, praying, preparing activities in which various persons can participate. The child focuses on something that is good, and by practicing it with others and seeking the internal good of that activity, a spark arises, igniting a fire that will leave in their minds and hearts an educational effect, virtues. What is the role of the Eucharist in education? The Eucharist is not an educational practice, although it has a huge indirect educational effect. Its meaning, hidden to the child in the beginning, will be gradually revealed to him by his participation in it. Moreover, it will be this close to him that the Eucharist is a key to understanding the whole universe. What first appears to him is that, in this rite, the most important words are those of the consecration, "Take and eat, this is my body for you." The child will realize that "for you" here means for me, that God gives himself for him, and thus he will discover his incomparable dignity in the fact that he is worthy of the blood of Christ. Secondly, he will discover that God is sensitive to his response of love. If the Lord has given himself by saying, "My body for you," through eating that body, he can now respond to him in return, saying, "My body for you." Third, in the Eucharist, the child learns the drama of life. There's blood poured out of the forgiveness of sins. There is the possibility of redemption, of change, of healing, because sins are never greater than his love, whose forgiveness is able to regenerate lost friendship. Fourth, the child understands that time is not only the movement of the clock or the passing of the days. The Lord asks us to do this in memory of me, of something past that becomes actual now and that opens a future for us. Celebrating the Eucharist is often like a continuous conversation about the meaning of the body, of creation, of freedom, of history, and a way of being introduced into the dynamic of Christ's love. From its fire, a spark can ignite in the heart of the child, who will now be able to understand the ultimate meaning of everything and to want true happiness. That inner fire reveals to him the meaning of all creation. It is God's gift to you. In that manner arises in him the desire to respond to this gift by giving himself in return, making himself a gift for others. This is the desire that will move him in the future to get ready for building a family and getting a job. In the Eucharist, we find the formula that explains the ultimate meaning of everything, my body for you. To eat it is to enter his own dynamism of self-giving. The Eucharist and the protagonists of education. The Eucharist unites us to the body of Christ, transforms us into him, makes us one with his body. The fire that burnt in the heart of Christ burns in those who receive communion. The same blood that flowed through Christ's veins now flows through our veins. This is how the educational covenant uniting God, the child, the family, and the teacher is generated, in which each one of us has our own protagonist role. A. The child is the main protagonist because his natural curiosity becomes a desire to know the ultimate why and what for of things. His desire to participate in common activities becomes harmonious with his parents and the teachers, so that the process of trusting them will allow him to accept the challenge of leaving his comfort zone. However, as the main character in his education, the child must choose to receive such a gift. Only in that manner can he join the covenant that will allow his education. B. Secondly, parents and siblings enter in. The Eucharist allows them to say, "My body for you," and to give their time and skills to the children. Thus, they will be able to generate a covenant in their family. To educate becomes, therefore, to transmit the law of God, especially the new law, which is the Holy Spirit. C. Finally, there's the role of the classroom teachers themselves. Their passion for making their students' life great and beautiful is born from the Eucharist, where they learn that they are not mere facilitators, but midwives, according to the classical image, who they give birth to the desire for truth, goodness, and beauty. In receiving communion, teachers experience a twofold effect. They understand the greatness of their students, and they are able to show students why "My body for you" is the key to understanding all reality, especially the aspect of reality currently being taught. Therein lies the ultimate truth of all truths that could ever be taught, that all creation is God's gift to us, and it is in the Eucharist that we understand it to be so. It is in this educational covenant that the excellence of life is communicated. What is excellence? We are used to regarding an excellent student as the one who surpasses the others, who performs above average. However, that understanding of excellence is a poor one with disastrous educational results. We are also used to hearing that excellence consists in reaching the full potential of the student, But again, that is also a limited understanding of our topic. Excellence comes from the Greek exelere, which means to surpass. What is surpassed? Precisely the child's measure, his own initial and natural potential. This is what an excellent student is, the one who surpasses himself. To do so, he must leave his comfort zone, his own measure, his own way of thinking and feeling. Then he will be able to acquire the measure of a truth and a goodness that is greater than himself. How is that possible? How can anyone go beyond his own potential? The Eucharist makes it possible, for the Eucharist gives us Christ as a gift that transforms our own nature. Doing so, he gives us the telos, and introduces us into his own fullness. Life then ceases to be the effect to reach an ideal and becomes the development of a gift we have received. Every gift, however, must be accepted, and acceptance in this case means commitment to the friend. This friendship will not only provide comfort, but a continuous challenge where our own measure will be stretched and expanded to the measure of Christ, something that will not happen without suffering. Practices. The next step in this process is to find the very best way to foster the connection between the student and the Eucharist in the school setting. There are several options that could be used, whether it is a mandatory daily or weekly Mass, an all-school or by-grade Mass, or even an option between study hall or Mass. And it is important to understand that one of the goals is to help the student to develop a personal and intimate friendship with Christ. Therefore, whatever practice we decide to use, it should move the student to make a personal choice for Christ's friendship, for they are called to become the main protagonist in the educational covenant. We want them to be able to stick to that relationship when they will be on their own, first in high school and afterwards in college. Any solution regarding Mass during the week should take into account the centrality of Sunday Mass. From Sunday to Sunday, the Mass marks the new beginning, which is the source of the entire school week. Another practice worth considering is a school of adoration, where students are taken to the church and taught to adore the Lord in the Eucharist. It is a good way to create that expectation for the moment in which the one adored in the Eucharist will be consumed and received in the student's body. The Eucharist is not an educational practice, but it is the key for education to reach its goal, the divinization of our human nature that makes us alter Christus. Two who didn't run with George Weigel. His neighbors in 1940s Oklahoma would have found it hard to imagine the boy they knew as Stanley Francis Rother as a future martyr and the first beatified American parish priest. Young Stan did reasonably well at school, enjoyed farm work and sports, drove a tractor at age 10, and was a gifted mechanic. Changed his scenery from suburban to rural, and Stan Rother, in his elementary and high school photos, could have stepped right out of the cast of Leave It to Beaver, the quintessential American kid. But with a difference, Stanley Rother had a deep piety of the sort one never saw in Theodore Beaver Cleaver or his family. That piety led Rother into the seminary, where he struggled with his studies, at one point being dismissed and sent home. He persevered, however, and finally found his academic legs at historic Mount St. Mary's Seminary in Emmitsburg, Maryland. Ordained in 1963, he spent the first years of his priesthood in Oklahoma before volunteering for service in Latin America. For over a decade, Father Rother, known to the indigenous peoples he served as Padre Francisco, worked on the uttermost peripheries of Catholic life in a small village near Lake Atitlan in Guatemala. And by work, I don't mean simply running a sacramental service station. Yes, he celebrated the sacraments, evangelized, and catechized his people, but he also did hard manual labor using the skills he had mastered in his family farm. Father Stanley Rother walked the walk, demonstrating with his sweat that example was a powerful form of witness and an effective catechetical tool. And a quondam seminarian who had had a very hard time with Latin, mastered both Spanish and a difficult local language, Utulhil, in order to translate the Missal and the New Testament into his people's first tongue. Guatemala was a political madhouse for over three decades. As a civil war tore the country apart between 1960 and 1996. Home on leave in 1980, Stanley Rother was warned not to return to his Guatemalan parish, as he would surely be a target for the death squads who murdered the indigenous peoples with impunity. But he was having none of that. "The shepherd cannot run at the first sign of danger," he famously said. So he returned to Santiago Atitlan, where three masked men killed him on July 28, 1981, but not before he seems to have put up a heroic fight at close quarters in order to distract the murderers from the religious sisters living at the parish. Stanley Francis Rother was beatified as a martyr on September 23, 2017, and his body now rests in a magnificent shrine built on the south city of on the south side of Oklahoma City, a new pilgrimage site in U.S. Catholicism, visited by tens of thousands in its first year. Blessed Stanley's heart, however, remains in the Church of Santiago Atitlan at the request of the people to whom he gave his life as both priest and martyr. It was perhaps providential that I was praying at the Blessed Stanley Rother Shrine on the day I learned of the death of Alexei Navalny, the latest victim of Tsar Putin's homicidal autocracy. For he was another martyr, if of a different sort. By the testimony of his friends, Stanley Rother was completely apolitical. He died in odium fidei, in hatred of the faith. Alexei Navalny, a political leader of the noblest kind, died in odium libertatis, in hatred of freedom, the freedom and decency he wished for his beloved Russian people. I never had the privilege of meeting Alexei Navalny, although I knew of his heroic work to build civil society in Russia and a democratic opposition to the Putin regime through my 9 years on the board of the National Endowment for Democracy. Navalny was not just a committed freedom fighter and master polemicist. He was a happy warrior, and I suspect paranoid Tsar Putin most feared Navalny's cutting humor and mockery. After surviving an assassination attempt in which he was poisoned with Novichok, a deadly nerve agent, he returned to Russia after recovering in Germany and was immediately arrested on spurious charges, consigned to a strict regime prison camp north of the Arctic Circle. He died there on February 16. Only fools imagine his a natural death. Both Stanley Rother and Alexei Navalny exemplified the cardinal virtue of courage, which is also a gift of the Holy Spirit. Perhaps one day, radically reformed Russian Orthodoxy returned to its Christian senses will honor Navalny as the Catholic Church has rightly honored Stanley Rother. Veteran Holy Family teacher looks back at 45 years of service. Coach and teacher Mike Gabriel marks 45 years at Holy Family, by Kevin J. Jones. Michael G. Gabriel has been on the faculty of Holy Family High School 45 years, and he has some memories to show for it. "I've pretty much done everything you could do in this school," Gabriel told the Denver Catholic. "Honestly, it's been a pretty fast trip. It doesn't feel like it's been that long. You just keep doing it every day, and all of a sudden you find yourself in it for that long." Gabriel, who turns 72 in 2 weeks, is currently a physical education teacher at the Broomfield High School. He has also taught social studies and theology. He has served as athletic director, assistant principal, and on an interim basis, even principal. He himself graduated from Holy Family High School in 1970. His late wife, Patricia Gabriel, went to that school and was born to parents who went to Holy Family. Her grandparents broke ground on the old Holy Family School building in North Denver, which accepted its first high school students in 1922. Though the high school moved to Broomfield in 1999, the Gabriels' four children continued the tradition. All four went there, Gabriel said. He has three grandchildren at the school, while one has graduated and three are waiting to attend. It's been a fun trip, and it's fun to watch your grandkids go to the same school that you went to and your kids went to, he added. It's great. After graduating college, Gabriel's student taught at the high school in 1973. A few years later, he was hired full-time, and he's been there ever since. Longtime Holy Family sports fans know that Gabriel is famous for his role as a coach. I've been coaching a lot longer than 45 years, he said. He has served as head basketball coach and head wrestling coach. He was head football coach three different times, totaling about 15 years. His time as head coach included two state championships. High school's football stadium bears his name, which first came as a surprise to him. That was quite an honor. It was a shock, Gabriel recounted. I'm very proud of it. But the state championships are certainly among Gabriel's good memories of his time at Holy Family. There are more. The good memories are watching the kids graduate, he said. Certain kids coming back to teach always makes you feel really good. We have quite a few alumni on staff. That always makes you feel pretty proud of what we do. His son is among those returning alumni. Michael D. Gabriel is now vice principal at the high school. He too once coached the football team. Just being here has been a great trip all the way around for memories, said Gabriel. His wife, Patricia, has a legacy, too. The road to the high school bears her name, Patty Gabriel Way. Holy Family in itself is like being in a small town, Gabriel said. Everybody goes to the school and everybody stays in touch. For me, that's a draw. Supporters of Catholic schools are observing National Catholic Schools this week from January 28th to February 3rd. As a longtime teacher, coach, and administrator, Gabriel praised Catholic education. I think Catholic schools are very important to help evangelize our kids and get into a little bit deeper association with the Catholic philosophy, he said. It's always good to be able to find a niche in a Catholic school. We can provide a niche for kids who are looking for that. Not all Holy Family students are Catholic, he said. But they all take theology, and they all have a similar need for community that this school provides. The high school community is still flourishing after a big move 25 years ago. It's kind of funny, Gabriel reflected. We were in North Denver until 1999. That was a strong, strong community. It was actually very, very difficult to leave. Now we've been here for the last 25 years. It feels like the community is very similar. I think Holy Family, and maybe all Catholic schools, offers the sense of community that people need. I think that's important. Thank you for joining us. My name is Chris Mihalik.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org. Or by calling 303-786-7777.